What is going on, my friends of the Nash? Welcome back to Get in the Trunk, Season 6. Getting deep in on this season and heading quickly towards a climax. I'm very, very excited to get back and play with these fine folks, especially those that come properly dressed for the occasion. Francis, you wore a collared shirt to today's episode, and I just want you to know I appreciate that.
Thank
is
you.
It purple? Is that a purple
color? Yes, it is.
You sexy son of a bitch.
Color of emperors. Thank you.
Yes. That's right.
The color of emperors. You look
born
sharp,
to the
buddy.
Purple.
Exactly. And also princes. You got it. You got it.
All true royalty.
Francis, you and I have, we met several years ago at Troy's bachelor party, I think is the first time we ever met.
Bachelor weekend extravaganza.
Bachelor weekend extravaganza.
It was fantastic.
And we hung out a couple times. I mean, maybe not much at all in person before we started playing Get in the Trunk. But, you know, I've had the pleasure of getting to know you a little bit more over the last couple of years, but I haven't really, there's still a few questions left out there. So I've got one for you today, and I'll kick it around. I'll kick it around the room. Just kind of a get to know you question, because I thought of this when this about, I don't know, a little over a month ago, we were in Boston. We did the Boston show. And wild story for those that didn't hear it. I think we talked about it elsewhere. Troy's buddy from high school brought a yearbook to that show. And we saw Troy and Rob Kirkovich in high school in that book. He was, you know, just came up to me in the VIP meet and greet, was like, check out this nerd. I was like, oh my God. It was really funny. So I'm curious to know, I'll ask you, Francis, and I'll kick it around real quick. What were your, if any, sort of major extracurricular activities in high school? Did you participate in any sports, in any clubs at all? Or did you just kind of like do school and go home and that's it?
No. I got my sports on and I had a couple extracurriculars there down the road. But I started with football, of course.
Well, you were playing high school football?
Yeah.
Nice. I didn't know that. What position?
It was ugly. It was real ugly. I played both ways. I went offensive tackle, defensive tackle, because I was a beefy kid.
Wow.
I was a chubby son. But we had a terrible team. It was awful. And I hated my coaches. And I quit after like the third game. I was like, this is garbage.
Guys are garbage. Well, why did you hate your coaches? Was it just because they pushed you to your limits?
They wanted to.
Or was it because they were genuine assholes?
That was the thing. They masked their assholeness as though they were coaches trying to push us to our limits. But we were like, I was like the biggest kid on the team. And like the other guys, there was like two or three other guys. There was like me and two other guys that were like of a size to play offensive or defensive line. And then like our offensive guard was like 150 pounds and like 5'8". Just like everybody else is like around the same side. Like we got crushed every game. I mean, we loved playing, but like that was the thing. The only thing that got us there was that we were having fun playing, but these guys took all the fun out of the game. So it's like, what the fuck are we even doing? We're just going out there getting smashed. Anyway, long story short.
So you played three games and then quit. Then what did you do?
Yeah. Then I played rugby and basketball and I did Model United Nations.
Whoa. So,
Look at you. Brains and brawn.
I mean, the Model United Nations was mainly so that I could go on the trip at the end of the year to because we would go to The Hague and there was legalized marijuana there. So I was like, I will definitely give you a speech about oil companies overreaching in third world countries and then I'll get high about it.
That's amazing. Model UN. That is something that I was always sort of like close to, but never actually did. I had friends that did it.
You would have loved it.
It was
all debate.
I was in speech and debate, so you would think it would be like an easy, for whatever reason, it passed me by. What about you, Skid? Did you ever, what did you participate in high school?
I didn't really do any sports. I did attend the Fat Lever Calvin Natt basketball camp in 1989.
Yes, yes, we've heard of that.
So
yes.
I have one most. I got the trophy right here.
Nice.
This new place. Yeah. You got a trophy wall.
Oh yeah.
Is that the most improved player trophy?
This is the most improved player.
It's a pretty nice trophy.
Solid. Yeah, that's solid,
man. But fucking Fat Lever himself, NBA All-Star, handed me this trophy.
That's huge.
And he recognized, because I got to spend some time with him because I faked an injury because I was so bad. And I was just like, my ankle was just like, all right, just go sit over there. Go sit over there. And so I went and like sat over in the corner, like the other gym. And Fat Lever like came by and he was just like, you feeling okay? And I was just like, it's just my ankle, Fat. Like, I just can't. It's just like, why don't you just hang out with me for a bit and see if you feel better. It's just like, okay. And so I just sat with him while he shot around. Nice. And he never had a good jump shot. So he's like, I'm just watching him like break a bunch of stuff. So he's like, what are you laughing at? He's like, oh, no, sorry. No, no. But he just like, he spent some time with me, like let me hang out with him for like, you know, 25 minutes or something. And he saw I was feeling better. He's like, you feeling okay now? And I was like, yeah, I feel better. And he's just like, why don't you go over there? Why don't you get back over there? So I was like, okay. And I rededicated myself and I won this trophy. So like when I won the trophy, he was just like, oh, it's this guy. And I was just like, yeah.
Nice.
So, and he's my favorite player. Like he's my favorite player like in the NBA history. Like I love him. So
that's awesome.
And I found out later, like he's a huge like comic book geek too and everything. Like I could have been talking about that.
Yeah. Oh, nice.
That's
nice.
Awesome.
You're making me think about now in this situation, I am the Fat Lever. However, I am not nearly as famous as the person on the other side of this. I don't know if I told you this. I think I may have. But I once gave a trophy to Josh Gad for acting.
Oh, you did?
No way.
Yeah. Oh, he was in high school. Pennsylvania, right? He's like,
nice from Florida.
Went to Carnegie Mellon and,
oh. Well, he came up there for college, but I think he's from Florida. I'm pretty sure he's from Florida. Okay. And he came up for a tournament at my college and we were hosting it. And so I was, you know, doing the presentation of awards and he was super good, you know, even back then. And I handed him his trophy, shook his hand. And then I worked with him at a camp later, like a year later, 2 years later. And then he went off to become famous, which is cool.
Wow, it's funny. And then he ended up being roommates with Nick Lowe's best friend.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's so random.
A bunch of small world stuff for sure.
Yeah.
Troy, what? I believe I saw musical. Wait, no, not musical. The improv. You did comedy improv, right? Didn't you have a comedy improv club?
It wasn't until he showed me that yearbook that I remember even being in that club. I played high school football for a year and a half and I gave it up because I was doing too much theater, which, as I probably mentioned on previous shows, went over really well in an all-boys school in 1994.
Yeah.
In Massachusetts.
You weren't accepted for your choices of giving up football for your dream of being on the stage?
Lots of words and phrases that they used back then that people don't say no more. I heard it a lot. Sorry, I got to go to play practice. I can't.
Oh, really?
Can't play football anymore. And they would just they'd say lots of different things. They'd be like, "Joke's on you. There are girls at play practice.
Yeah, right.
You're showering with dudes. Did you guys have to do that? Do you have to shower? I wonder if they still do this. Like, they'd be like, "All right, everybody in," and you just have to fucking shower with dudes.
So weird. I had to shower with dudes. This is my memory of it. Or maybe it was just change with dudes, but it was all naked dudes. I was a freshman in high school and I was a young freshman. So I went into high school.
You were just touring the high school.
Get
in there, shower.
Get in there, shower.
Run in room.
In room.
I got the shower. It's like, well, I'm here. Let's see what the shower is like.
I entered high school at 13. I was 13 years old. And in September, October, right in that range, like my first gym class, we had to go change. And I just remember being like, oh my fucking God. Like it was just all these hairy dudes and me not hitting puberty yet. Like it was awful. Awful.
It sucks.
There's no way they do this anymore.
It's unreasonable.
I was very lucky. My freshman year, we had gym class, like I think it was after lunch, and you would have two There were two coaches. And then one guy was this like military veteran, like hard nose. He was the head coach of the football team, but he retired and now he was just the gym coach. And he would stand there with a clipboard making sure every kid showered like a psychopath.
That's so weird.
I had the like clearly alcoholic drinking on the job coach.
Oh, God.
Who was just like, you shower? And I was like, yep, as I was walking out in sweaty clothes because I was like, I didn't want to shower the guys. I probably did it like over like three times over my entire high school career, but that were the kids that had to do it every single day. It seems so barbaric and
it's weird,
like a remnant of the 60s. Just like, all right, everybody get in there and shower together. That's how we do things.
Yeah, it was the most terrifying experience that I think I had like in high school. It was like, what's having to do that all the time? It was like, I hate it.
Sucked.
I'm trying to remember. Because I'm a little younger than you guys. I'm trying to remember.
You're quite a bit younger than.
Well, Skid, we're close in age.
You could be Skid's daughter.
I could be your father. I would say
that. In fact, where were you 25 years ago?
Actually, bro, I know.
We have a lot in common,
what's
you and
Bob's
I, Skid.
Name again?
I've always wanted
what's
to ask you.
What was that she's waitress's
scrolling,
name again?
Scrolling through his cell phone. Got to do about 23 and me.
Oh, my God. Imagine. Oh, that'd be really funny.
That'd be hilarious.
We had showers and we did swimming sometimes and like you showered after the swimming, but I don't remember really anybody showering after a gym class. Like that would have been, if you did, whatever, to each their own. But I think if you did at my time in high school, you were like, well, finished gym class, got a shower. All the other people in the locker room would be like, huh, weird. I guess they.
Yeah, but when you finished swimming, were all the girls showering together?
No, the showers were stalls. Like,
right.
See, yeah.
These were like that's open. Civilized. These were like open prison showers.
Yeah, it's so weird. Like all the old school, like our like elementary school and like middle schools had like men's bathrooms that didn't have doors to the stalls. They were just like, literally like a trough.
It's like a prison. You're like, oh, there's a guy shitting. Right
exactly. Yeah. Like, there's a person shitting.
It
with
was
no
like
door
a making eye contact with a
that
shitting guy.
Is insane. Yeah.
It's
that's
insane.
Scary.
It did make
it must
any
have
sense.
Been so much worse for the girls, I would think, like in school, like with how awful like after
to
high
each
school
other.
Girls
sure.
Being, yeah.
Yeah.
That's what's even worse for them. Like I can imagine. Like for me, like I know how bad it was. I can only imagine. Like it was such a horrible practice.
Dude, I got stories that I cannot even tell on air of the way kids were terrorized around
the
shower. Just awful. After football practice, I would just sprint in all my pads up there, take my shower quick and be out of there before anybody else.
Yeah. I would just go home dirty and then shower. Yeah, like, that's the best. Yeah, I mean, come on. Like, what the hell?
I'm not sure. If I could. Maniacs. A lot of kids, like, they were lucky they'd have, like, gym last period of the day. And it's like, I'll just shower at home. And then
Yeah.
But it's like, as a freshman, whatever, like, you're being terrorized by upperclassmen constantly. You're in constant fear. How much worse is it when you're naked?
Yeah. That's a terrible idea.
Like, God.
Sydney, did you have to shower with anyone in the poetry club? What art clubs were you a part of?
Good verse. Come on. Hit the showers, kids.
Hit the showers, kids.
Hold my clipboard up. Have you showered? I think I've talked about it on air. I did track and field. I was a pentathlete. I was like very athletic.
Nice.
And I did the musicals and the plays. I also did STARS, which was Students Teaching AIDS Reduction Strategies. And I would teach younger. Yeah, I know. Joe's like,
how to reduce AIDS?
It was mostly about like safe sex. It was like a sexual education by students for students. So like the high schoolers would go to the middle school and we would be like, this is a condom.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah.
Would you like act out like scenarios like for the middle schoolers?
You know, 1,000% I would write sketches for this.
This was just an extension of theater club.
Like, yes. I would literally write sketches like Johnny's at a party texting like, oh, somebody walks in. It's like, let's go have a good time.
Did you hear Tom has AIDS?
literally.
Oh my God.
But I mean, still, it was so like dated. I mean, we talked about like dental dams, which is like not a thing anymore.
Wow.
But we would talk, like our teachers would be like, you have to talk about dental dams. You have to talk about diaphragms. And I was like, no one uses this shit.
Jesus Christ.
We barely use dental dams.
Who's got a closet full of dental dams at home?
You pass him out. Imagine 14-year-old Sydney, who didn't fuck a day in her life, giving 11-year-old a condom.
That's not right.
Oh my God.
I would be 17 talking about sex. I didn't have sex. I was like, let me tell you a little something, something. That was a funny club I was in.
Why did you join it?
I mean, it was good for college. It was, I think, I don't know.
You're beefing up the resume.
You're beefing up the resume. A bunch of people did it. But I'm trying to think. I never talked about on air. I also used to do something called Odyssey of the Mind.
We did Odyssey of the Mind.
That sounds familiar.
Yeah, I don't know if you still have it, but
it's just you drop acid or
best club ever, man.
It's such a bizarre.
You do things like you build like a bridge out of balsa wood, like
yeah,
like
different
projects you do. It's like an engineering
bizarre
thing.
But it could can be,
but it's like other stuff.
Yeah, it's basically like each group, it's a competition, and every year, each group, you audition to be an Odyssey of the Mind. You might get in, and each group gets a problem they need to solve by the time of the competition date. So sometimes it's engineering, sometimes it's like creative writing, sometimes it's just like logic problem solving. So I used to do that, and of course, I made everything also into a sketch and a play. So that we saw the direction I was like going in from a young age. My parents were like, great. I think she just wants to do plays. But yeah, it was a lot of that. And then I got into college probably because of all the sex classes I taught.
Probably. That's right. They're looking at all your grades and they're like, yeah, but where's her sexual responsibility form?
They get to that, they're like, very responsible. She's
very responsible.
Hugely responsible.
She taught middle schoolers about sex.
Oh my God. So embarrassed. Not only that, I also taught high schoolers. I was in high school talking to other high schoolers.
That's worse than showering in the gym.
I think back and I was
just
like,
just pictured a dude in the back of the class like, I bet it's easy for you to abstain. It's like horrible high schoolers.
That is what it was like. It'd be like the popular kids, and I'd be like with a wooden penis showing them how to put a condom.
Oh my God.
Just looking at the most popular hockey player, and I was like,
oh my God.
Wearing a sweater like this.
Oh my God.
Do you have video of this? Dude, does anybody video
this? Please tell me these were tapes.
God, I hope not. I was so brave back then. I was so brave.
Jesus.
Real bravery. It's real
brave. Wow.
Jesus Lord, that's brave.
That took a turn I did not expect. Sydney, thank you for being alive.
Thank you, Sydney.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You're wonderful. Wow, that went on way longer than I expected. So we're going to get a solid 8 minutes of Impossible Landscapes in today. I'm looking forward to that.
Let's take a quick break.
For real.
Woo! Hey, a breather.
Sweating. Anyway, we are at a huge turning point in this particular adventure. You guys have come to the world of Carcosa, which is wild. I asked you several episodes ago, I think it was episode 3 or 4 of this season. I wanted to start building what this is going to be in, and I wanted to get your player thoughts about what Carcosa is, your impressions. Over the years, you've seen Carcosa come up in different mediums. You've heard it mentioned in this game. And so I was curious kind of what your presumptions were about this place, knowing that eventually this adventure would lead you there, which is just wild to me. I remember when I first opened the book and read that that is where it leads. I thought, wow, that's crazy. Because one of the coolest things to me about Carcosa is that it remains so horrific and mysterious and distant, right? Like, you don't actually go there, because if you do, you're dead, or you're dead already, or something like that. Now, I'm not saying that's not the case, because you guys are in pretty deep to be here. But it is going to be interesting to explore this place and see what Dennis Detweiler and the other contributing authors and developers of this campaign believe Carcosa is, because it is such a strange and kind of nebulous thing. It's going to be interesting to explore, and we're going to start it today. And so, by way of a brief recap, you guys made your way through the Whisper Labyrinth, fought a paper tiger, and defeated it immediately by shattering a lantern under it. Nice work, Sid. As it lit on fire, it ran away in fear. And you then moved to find J.C. Lintz's bottle, which you found. And upon removing the bottle from its pedestal, you were somehow transported, whether it was mental or in time or what was happening, you're not quite sure. But you all were on a flight together and you felt like it was a different time and you were almost a different person. You were the same identity, but you had lived a different life or more years of that life or something. But at the same time, you also knew you were in the middle of this pursuit of Carcosa and the King in Yellow. And you eventually, Roger runs down the aisle of the plane as Vicky is shooting the flight attendant in the back of the head who looked like Asa Darabondi. And Troy, knocking out the pilots, had Roger drive the plane into a crash landing in what appeared to be Chesapeake Bay or Baltimore Inner Harbor region. And when you guys woke up, you were suddenly and inexplicably laying on a sandy beach by a lake with a ruined city in the distance and another city. Seemingly, we see this through Roger's eyes, deep beneath the waters of the lake, the city lights shimmering far down below. Somehow Roger knows without question that this place is Carcosa, that in a way he is coming home. It feels like almost like a childhood home. Like it's dreamlike, but familiar. And he knows that deep beneath this lake is the city of Yathil, which is where the king holds court. This knowledge is sort of just immediately part of your mind as the rest of, as Roger looks around and sees the rest of you slowly starting to wake and stand up on this beach. What do you do?
What's like immediately around us?
Yeah. Immediately around you is this, you're on the shore of a lake. The lake looks, the water looks almost black and so calm, completely still, like a mirror. In the distance of the lake, far out straight to the horizon, is just mist. Can't see another end of the lake. I'll say that's in front of you, quote unquote. You see some large objects on the beach, some distance north of you, along the shore. They look like maybe tree logs, like large tree logs laying horizontally. Behind you are the remnants of a ruined city, completely burnt out, blackened. Everybody give me, let's do an awareness roll, alert. I can't, fuck, why do I never remember that word? Whatever it is.
I think it's awareness, right?
You're not so much searching for something here. It's alertness.
Alertness.
My, yeah. Go with your first.
I got a
instinct, O'Brien.
A 3 under 86.
3 under 86. Okay.
Ooh, 25 under 44.
42 over 24.
14, baby.
Ooh.
Great job. All right, you guys, as you peer around, all of you. Wait, Francis, you passed it, right?
Yep. Oh.
All.
Sorry. Yep.
All of you, don't mute your mic, you shady son of a bitch. Are you talking to somebody off camera?
I was typing.
It's got a meeting.
You notice as you look to the fallen city and look back to the lake and look back to the fallen city, as your periphery of the city moves, so do the actual physical buildings of the city. It seems to be morphing before your very eyes. A building is there, and then it kind of shimmers, and it's two stories smaller. Or a building is not there, and then suddenly a tower rises in its place. But, like, it's a trick of the eye. Was it there a moment ago? You know, it's you're getting these distorted sort of vibes of how the city presents itself.
It's so funny, like at the first episode of Strange Aeons, you're in Carcosa, and it's described very similarly. These like broken buildings that seem to be stretching ever upward. So there's this commonality to what Carcosa is. But I don't know the implications.
So other than that, extremely plain. That's all you see. You see a ruined city that could be walkable. Maybe if you walked toward it for a half an hour, you would get to the outskirts of the city. So what I'm saying is you can see almost the whole city beginning to end from the distance that you're at, like at least the central part of it. And you could walk there, almost like seeing skyscrapers of a downtown and being able to walk there in a half hour, an hour. Between you and that is just sand, it appears. And then around the lake, you don't see anything but these logs. And then out in the distance over the lake, mist.
Roger has a middling occult. I just want to roll an occult to see if I remember anything that I may have read over the years about Carcosa that would give me any insight.
Okay.
Can I do that too?
Sure.
Yeah. 49 over 24. I was mainly rolling so that I could check it because I knew I'd fail.
I mean, I could roll too.
I didn't think, I never thought about occult.
76 over 13.
Oh, 47 over 10%. I'll guess I'll check mine too.
Got an 86 over 23. Yeah.
Ooh, check them all off. This is a
little
Delta to
Green hack.
This one weird trick.
Increase your occult knowledge with this one weird trick.
Okay.
Yeah.
So.
You really don't know, except the one thing that is clear to you in your mind, I'll say, Roger, is that. And you know what, Neil, you have this in your mind as well, that as you come up toward the edge of the lake, you can see shimmering lights deep, deep under the water. And it looks like the lights of a city at night, sunken beneath the water. Both of you are very confident that that is where the king resides and that that is where you must go.
Underwater.
Underwater.
Okay.
Apparently.
Bad idea.
So for Bobby,
go
this,
get him, Neil.
This city for Bobby, this city resembles the city from his dream, right? Where he was fighting in that war.
Mm-hmm. It resembles it. However, the war, it seems, here is long, long over.
Okay.
What you can see from this distance, I know it's a ways away, but it appears you don't hear, like when you were there before, you heard the constant sort of sounds of shelling in the distance or gunfire, clack, 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 echoing. You hear no sounds of battle. It is completely still. There's a night sky above you with stars and two moons. And it is a peaceful, quiet night. A light breeze comes across you. You know what I picture? I kind of picture Contact. Ooh. When she's on
the beach.
Yeah.
It sort of has a surreal feeling to it, but it is very peaceful and very calm. But, you know, I guess I should add in, you are after all in Carcosa. There is a vague sense of melancholy, like a sadness. Mm. To the very atmosphere. It feels strange.
Gray, kind of overcast almost.
Yeah. And you feel additionally as if you're being watched. An eerie feeling.
What about up? Like, what does the sky look like?
The sky has an array of stars with two moons in orbit overhead. There's really nothing else you can see there. No, it's not very cloudy. It's a pretty clear night.
Is there a rock or a stick nearby?
Give me a sanity check.
Oh boy.
Oof, Jesus.
Okay. All right.
That makes sense. That's not a good sign.
Look at the dirt. Are you sane?
Can success. I look at the ground? Give me a sanity.
I succeeded with a 16.
Oh, 16. You look around and it looks like a plain, like almost manicured white beach. There's nothing. No stray. Except, like I said, in the distance, a few hundred feet away, these fallen logs is what it appears to be from a distance.
Let's go look at those logs.
Yeah, Vicky. Yeah, Vicky's got her gun. I saw my gun, right?
Give me a sanity roll.
I knew. God, why did I even ask? Why did I ask?
It's like, what time through, is it? Give me a sanity.
Should have kept my mouth shut.
You went through this place, this strange sort of touched another time for a moment. And when you appeared here, things were different. You don't have the things on you that you had before, at least in the moment. And you're still kind of getting your bearings.
Well, I just rolled a critical success, a 44 under 46.
She has my bearings
lubricated and running smoothly.
So many balls in your bearings.
Bearings got
yeah, you go to reach down and you feel like this is going to happen a few times. I want to apologize for it, but please just try to go with me on this. Okay. This you are no longer in our reality. And as a result, things are going to happen that don't make logical sense. And you're going to have to kind of work with that. The best way I can describe it is that you feel like there is a gun there, but you can't get it at the moment. And you don't understand why.
Even though I passed the sanity check, like I mm-hmm. feel like there is, but I can't access that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. And I think maybe that's why, you know, Vicky is doing okay. Because she, right back to Kearney Hospital, right back, or not Kearney Hospital, Dorchester House, right back to Dr. Dallin. She's like, in her head, this is fake. This is not real. I have my gun. I am Vicky Ricci. I am who I am. This doesn't exist. So she's going to like pat her side, know that.
Let me challenge you on that for a second.
Okay.
How can you be here if it doesn't exist?
It's our consciousness.
So if that's the case, and it is
a dream,
an illusion, or a place that's not physical, where is your body? If you're, you know, if you're sane at this moment, explain how that's where your body is.
I think.
And also, how would you test that theory?
Yeah. I mean, Vicky just shot a flight attendant in the head because she felt in the moment that it was not real. You know, that she wouldn't be hurt by that. She wouldn't be affected by that. And I don't know, maybe she says out loud, they want
You guys haven't talked to each other yet.
Yeah, you're just silent on the beach.
You're kind of like taking this all in. This is just the first few seconds.
That was weird, huh?
Yeah.
Vicky says, They want us to believe in what they show us. That's how they control us. They want us to be scared. They want us to think that we're stuck, that we can't get out. That's how they get trapped. That's how they get trapped.
Who?
That's how they can't leave.
Who they?
Roger. We cannot lose sight of our plan. Okay? Bobby, Neil, listen to me. If we lose sight, that's how they get in. That's how they take over us. That plane, that wasn't real. It's not.
And as soon as you say that, boom, all of the water on the lake that was like just gurgling up along the beach sand completely freezes. There is no wind and no feeling of air. There is no movement from the buildings or the stars or the moons. And in an instant, sound completely drops out and you feel as if you are standing in a painting. She says, that plane was not real. and it's like everything froze. Continue.
Vicky pauses, feeling the change of like atmospheric pressure.
Like,
and then she gets quiet. We have to go along with what they think. We think. But we cannot follow the path that everyone else followed. I will not be trapped here. I am going to get my son, and I am going to get out of here.
Vicky, who is they? Who is this they you're talking about?
Them, Roger. The scribes, the king, Abigail now, anyone who becomes part of it. Whatever it, I don't know what it is. But they have power. They have power. And when people have power, they have control.
Vicky, you immediately see over by the logs four shapes of what look like humans, but they're so distant it's just kind of like outlines, and they're standing completely still among the logs looking at you.
Just instinctively goes to get her gun, but doesn't.
Give me
pull
a sanity roll.
It's like I fart. Give me a sanity roll.
You don't smell it.
Yeah. What?
21 under 46.
Your instinct is for you to drive down toward your gun. You reach, again, nothing there, of course. And the figures are gone.
She's just staring.
But the feeling that you're being watched doesn't go away.
They know. They know what they know. Anything we say, anything we, they. This is their. We're in their house.
Is this the battle, or is the battle to come?
I think the battle is past.
What was it?
I think we were there.
The lake, its shadow, the battle.
Do you remember? Do you remember, Roger?
Remember what?
I was in a war, a city that looked kind of like that in the distance. And you were there. So was my father. And then I woke up in the hospital and you were there. But this city, whatever that's left of it, doesn't. It's not the same. It doesn't. There's no battles. There's no gunfire. There's no mortar shells going off. It's quiet. I don't know.
Neil, give me a intelligence times 5 roll.
Uh, 39 under 75.
Wow. As they're talking, you are standing at the edge of this lake and you're looking down at the flickering lights beneath, and your intelligence, your successful intelligence roll tells you that the lights you're seeing in that city below, that somehow inexplicably, you don't understand it rationally, but you can tell from the shape of the buildings that the city below the lake is the same city as the city that is behind you, that is a few miles behind you. Inexplicably, it's the same city, except it seems like people are living there.
Yeah, the city beneath the water looks alive. The one above the water looks like it's dead.
Yeah, and from the vague, you know, maybe it's 100, 200 feet beneath the water line. So it's deep, but like you get the sense that the building structures are the same.
Right. Neil starts walking towards the human-like shapes down the beach.
Vicky, you know, quietly is like, Neil, and goes to follow Neil.
Neil, you see these four human shapes in among these logs, and as you start to approach, you see the waves start coming in again. And you feel the air blowing in your face. Only this time the waves kind of start going like quickly, as if it's like you're watching a stop motion thing, you know, like on stop motion. What am I thinking of?
Time lapse.
Like you're walking through a time lapse of Blake Holly, and you see this quickly shimmering, and you see these four figures walk, spread out among the logs, look, turn, and walk away, and and they seem to disappear further along the beach, almost as if time sped up as you started walking up there. Very, very odd feeling. But you can keep walking that way.
Yeah, I'm going to keep walking. I want to get up to the logs. Okay.
All right, so as Neil walks up there and Vicky is following behind, Neil, you come up and you see these, what appeared to be logs from really far away, are what looks like very, very large tree trunks, except they have been hollowed out in the middle and have been carved expertly into boats. Oh. And as you get up to the edge of them, you see there are hundreds of them along the beach, as long as you can see into the distance. Just boat after boat after boat after boat. And they're all aligned slightly differently. They're not like perfectly aligned. But you look around and yeah, they're all perfectly formed boats, as if they are cut from one piece of wood each.
How far is the city... the dead city behind us?
It is like eyeing it up three or four miles, so walkable.
Neil is going to get into one of the canoes. And are there oars? Paddles?
You look around. No oars, no paddles. But you, Neil, feel as if you don't need them.
Yeah, he's going to like stand outside and just sort of push it down the shore into the water and get in as it slides into the lake.
I think he's going to call to everybody then, yeah. Like, Neil found a boat! Neil found a boat!
I mean, I think you're all there, right?
Oh, yeah.
It's like close right? by, okay. Or we're following him. Okay.
Neil, you could start pushing this thing, but it's pretty heavy up on the sand. You would just probably need one other person to help you kind of just push it and guide it into the water if that's the way you guys want to go.
All right. Bobby runs up and starts helping to push.
Does it seem like we each need to get our own boat, or are they like big enough?
They're huge.
Oh, okay. Then we'll
you think you could fit 20 people in this canoe.
Oof. Wow.
Yeah, but they're all, you know, they're think like California redwoods hollowed out and cut into one long boat. Okay. So it's very narrow, relatively speaking, but they could fit a lot of people.
So we all help with the one boat.
Yep.
Roger's looking in the direction of where those human-like shapes are. And he goes, what if those are our shadows?
What? What do you mean?
What if those shapes are us?
What if they are? There's two cities, there's multiple shadows, there's two fucking moons, Roger. I don't know.
Just thought it was a cool thought.
Well, what'd you go say to yourself?
What if those shadows are us?
Do you have anything else to contribute? Roger.
No, I can lift this redwood myself. And he puts it up on his finger and spins it like a Harlem Globetrotter.
We're all very impressed.
Yeah. Wow. Pretty cool.
Whoa.
Roger, give me a sanity roll.
39. Success.
You go to help Neil with this boat. You find that it is very... very heavy. but you, with your strength, you can move it. Is that something you want to do?
Yeah. Yeah, I'll push it towards the lake.
Okay. You start pushing it towards the lake. Pushing. pushing, and then it breaks the edge of the water, the shoreline, into the water, and then obviously becomes very light, becomes much lighter. And now give me an order. Who is in the front as you're hopping in? Who's hopping in first? Who's in the front? Who's hopping in last? Who's in the back?
I'll get in last. So I can
all right,
give
so
it,
Roger's
like, the
in the back of the
push,
boat pushing.
Like, and then jump in.
Okay.
I'll be in the front.
I'll hop in right after
yeah,
Neil.
Vicky wants to be sandwiched in the middle, so she'll be right after Bobby, right before Roger.
Right in front of Roger. Okay. As Roger pushes it off the sand and leaps up into the side of the boat, and it edges out from the shore, you look off to the left, and you see the silhouette of four figures seemingly pushing off the coast in a boat, parallel with you, riding out somewhere. Let's take a quick break. We'll come right back and see what happens next. We are back, and you have pushed a giant canoe cut from a single log out into Lake Hali. You push this boat, this canoe, this large canoe, out into the water, and in the distance, you see what Roger believes to be a shadow of yourselves some distance away, doing almost the exact same thing, looking back at you. Is that what this is? I don't know. But what I do know is that each and every one of you in that moment, whether you see the shadows or not, feel an overwhelming sense of correctness, a sense of purpose being fulfilled as you step into the boat and enter the lake. The feeling pushes back that melancholy that you felt on the beach, and you immediately regain 1d4 sanity points.
Oh, all of you. Yeah.
I love when this happens, but I hate when this happens.
I'll tell you this.
Got 3 points.
It happening is so bad.
Yeah.
It's so bad because it is the seeping in truly of Carcosa. It's amazing.
Oh, God.
I feel fine.
Whatever. I'm not going to go into it. Here we go. You push out. You feel this overwhelming sense of correctness. Anybody get a 4-bagger?
No. No. I got a 3, though.
That's good. Bobby could use it.
Oh, yeah.
I need Neil?
Got a 1.
Damn it, Neil.
I got a rock.
Raj?
Yeah, 1 for Roger, too.
Damn.
All right. A 2 for Vicky.
2 for Vicky. So 1-1, 2-3, no 4s. You push out into the lake, and the mists in the distance seem to come at you rather quickly. In a very short amount of time, you are sort of covered in this fog, and you're kind of bobbing in the water, and that the four figures, the boat that you saw in the distance, you cannot see any longer as you become completely covered in this fog. And you get the sense, Neil, the overwhelming feeling that you can move this boat with your mind. That, like, you don't need oars, you don't have to paddle. But if there is a direction you wish to go, you can just make it go that way. Is there a direction you want to go? You've just pushed out from the shore. Immediately you're enveloped in fog and you don't even see the shore. Would you like to go along the shore to the north, along the shore to the south, away from shore, or back to shore? Those are really your main options.
Shore to the north.
Shore to the north.
Cross pollination.
Can we still see the city beneath us?
Yes.
Where we are?
You can still see the flickering lights beneath you.
Roger spits into the water.
That's rude.
Give me a sanity check.
Oh my God.
Guys, if we touch anything in this Seriously. World.
Eight. No spit comes out.
You have no it saliva.
It bounces back into your mouth.
This place is wrong.
You spit into the water and it seems to hit this inky black water and just swirl around into it. Neil, what are you thinking?
I mean, I kind of just want to go out into the lake over the city, just sort of explore it from above.
Okay, give me a sanity roll. Even as you think this, the boat starts to move slowly, as if propelled away from shore. You start to feel the water coming, rushing by.
21 under 34.
Nice. You begin pushing out to shore, and the water is going past you, and you feel like you're getting closer and closer to being over the city at this point. Nothing else changes. You're still covered in fog.
Can Vicky do an alertness as we're getting closer to this city just to try to see if the water is calm enough? Like, the city is alive and active. Are people, is it one of those mental things where she can see people just walking around like normal, like as if they're not underwater, breathing underwater? Just trying to do like an alertness to try to see if I can see people in the cityscape.
That'd be more of a search.
Okay, then yeah, give me a search. I'll do a search.
Alertness is sort of like noticing danger, you know, the corner of your eye, behind you, whatever.
Spidey sense.
Yeah.
Mm. 32 under 57 for search.
Vicky, you look over the side of the boat and you see the lights down in the distance, and then you start to see little flashes. Flashes of light that look like explosions, small explosions going off.
Battle.
And as you see this, you think about Abby's note, you think about the battle, and in that moment, you feel like something's wrong with the water.
Okay.
Like that it might not even be there.
Okay, that's what I was... Okay. Huh. Vicky is going to put her hand down. She's going to try to put her hand through the water, feel if there's water.
You put your hand down and touch the surface of the water. And as soon as you break through it, you feel no water. And immediately, all around you, the water vanishes and becomes the same as the fog and mist around you. And it's just fog, as if you're in a cloud looking down at the city.
What?
But only you see this in this moment.
Oh. You hear Vicky gasp. She just... as she leans back
You
up.
See her touch the water and then gasp.
She leans back up onto the boat.
What?
There's nothing under you. At any second, you could plummet to the earth.
It's not water. It's not water. We're not in water. We're in the air. We're floating.
What are you talking about? Do we see this? We don't see this, right? We just see water?
The Bobby, rest of give us? Me a sanity roll.
Oh, God. Oh, 30. Oh, shit. 31 over 21.
He smashed into his microphone. Oh, it is insanity.
Punches the mic.
As soon as she says this, Bobby, you look out over and there is no water there. It is just air, a cloud, a mist. You see the lights down in the distance as if you are in a cloud over the city with nothing between you and it but open air.
Oh God. Oh God!
What's oh God! What?
We're gonna fall. We're gonna fall.
We have to get down.
Calm down. Calm down.
They start panicking in the boat. They start panicking in the boat.
Calm down.
Rocking the boat.
We're gonna fall.
I want to think the boat down into the city, into the fog, into the water.
Okay.
It's the water to me. I'm gonna think it down.
you think to pitch the boat down into under the water like a submarine, and you see it starts to dip down into break the surface. And as soon as that water would come up over the edge, it immediately vanishes for you and for you as well, Roger, in the front of the boat. Or wait, you're in the back of the boat. As soon as it would come over and crest the boat and come in, it vanishes. And it just becomes this, like, it's almost all the water was instantly flash steamed into steam or something. It's like, so there's something all there, but it's all just mist. And Neil starts bending this boat with his mind, and it just starts slowly descending through the cloud. You feel the same calm breeze. But remember, it's nighttime, so it is kind of dark. There's like the moonlight is lighting this, but it's still pretty eerie and dark as you start moving down and through this mist. So far, no issues. And I assume you just want to keep pitching it down toward the city.
Oh my God, Vicky's white knuckling the side of the canoe. We're just like
gripping. Jesus. Jesus.
Give me a sanity check.
Who?
Us?
Bobby and Vicky.
Okay.
Oh, Jesus, 73.
Oh, my God.
Neither of you have been in a chopper and it shows.
Oh, God.
Man, Vicky is holding it together. I got a 6.
Oh, man.
Wow.
Oh,
Bobby's shitting his pants again.
Bobby, you have the clear realization that Neil is completely in control of this boat.
Okay.
And that as long as you remain in the boat, you're not going to fall.
Okay.
The boat is keeping you safe, and Neil is the one doing that.
Okay.
Vicky, you are petrified that you could fall at any moment, and you take minus 20% to all skill checks as long as you feel this petrified fear that you're going to fall, that the boat is going to plummet out of the sky.
Wow. Good sanity for once is having bad repercussions.
In this place.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Wow.
This is exactly how I feel whenever I ride Space Mountain. I feel the exact same way.
Oh my God. Vicky's like hyperventilating a little bit.
All right. So Vicky starts freaking out. She's distracted. She's, to use Pathfinder parlance, she's frightened.
Frightened one.
She can't really keep her mind focused. As you start to descend down, you begin to hear these remote sounds, Bobby, of battle. Sort of explosions and stuff like that, but very, very distant.
Battle.
Mortars.
Mortars, exactly. But then all of you hear a slowly crescendoing sound that starts emanating from all around you. Kind of hard to describe. It's this sort of deep... It's this deep, but also kind of high-pitched, gurgly kind of sound, as if maybe you're being swallowed by something, maybe, or there's something else in here with you. You hear this... These bizarre sounds start echoing at you, sort of from every angle, as you continue to descend. And then, out of nowhere, to the north, the sound becomes a little bit more clear and a little bit more localized. And you see this enormous black shape in the sky with you, somewhat circular in shape, that is like the size to you. It's like nearly the size of like a planet, basically, like another moon in the sky. Huge. And it seems to be growing larger and larger and coming toward you, this complete like circle of blackness in the mist is just moving towards you, as you know, like Arrival, that movie. Yeah. Like, kind of sounds like that, like the aliens are making. It's kind of these strange sounds, and this thing is approaching toward you.
Dude, this is scary. This is the Prisoner.
Oh yeah, Rover.
Rover, yeah. Oh, I think that's what this is.
Oh weird.
Yeah, yeah.
what is it?
In the Prisoner, like whenever he tries to escape, or anyone tries to escape, man, that show, as dated as
I've been thinking about that show a lot.
As that show is, there were some special effects they did that just fucking worked, and they had this. There was just this floating cylinder. I don't know how they did it. It's like the '60s. This floating cylinder that would capture the person and bring them,
it's
them
a big
back.
Balloon, and it would. It would
and it was terrifying. You'd see the balloon,
really,
and then you'd see someone's face pressing against it. Like, that's where I think this might be going, but I don't know. That's what I immediately think of.
Starring Patrick McGoohan.
The story is his own.
Patrick McGoohan, no born shit. In Astoria.
Get the fuck
balloon,
out of here.
The balloon thing also makes me think of the horror movie Nope. If you guys saw that one.
Oh, God, yeah. That was a fucking nightmare.
I didn't see it.
The creature itself is like horrifying. Oh, God. Like, it's like Cthulhu. Like, you're like, what even is that? Like, I don't understand what I'm looking at.
It's an absolute nightmare.
And that's how you feel. So everybody give me a sanity check as this thing is approaching you. It is, I'm just trying to describe how big it seems to you. It seems like you could fit 1,000 of your boats in it.
Is that a whale? It sounds like whale sounds.
Wait, hold on. I don't know if this is good or not, but I got double zeros.
That's good.
That is a critical fail.
It's a critical fail. Yeah,
that's as bad of a roll as
I was like, it's really low.
That's a 100. That is a critical failure on your sanity. Bobby, I'm so sorry, buddy.
Fuck.
In this moment. Raj?
What is it, sanity?
Sanity check.
Sorry, I totally missed that.
God damn it.
41. Success.
Success. Okay. Vicky?
52 over 48 failure.
Oh, Vicky never fails.
Oh, man.
And Neil?
55 over 31.
Oh, another fumble.
Critical fail.
We're all fucking it up.
All right, Neil and Bobby, you each take 4 points of sanity damage.
I just got those.
And it's partially the sound, too. It's like shredding your mind. Vicky, you take 3 points of sanity damage.
Awesome.
What is it? What is it? It's in my mind.
Having a thought, my mind.
Whoa.
And in that moment, Roger, you take no sanity damage. And in that moment, this cylindrical or this spherical circular shape that was approaching you starts to move to the side and elongate in an odd way. And then it comes through the mist and it is clear to you. Now it's so close. This is a whale. And it does appear to be the size of a skyscraper. It is absolutely enormous.
It's a whale scraper.
You could put a few of your boats in one of its five eyes that it has on one side of his head as it's just moving through this air and seems to not do react to you at all. It seems to be just passing by.
Bobby's just grabbing, trying to back into the boat. Like,
Jesus Christ. Oh, Christ.
Vicky, how does this sanity loss manifest?
I
see how it manifested for Bobby. He's pushing back. You know you have to stay in the boat to stay safe.
Yeah.
I think Vicky, God, she's just silent, like wide-eyed, after just convincing herself they weren't in water, watching Neil control the canoe down through not water. That was one thing. But now seeing a fucking whale in the sky because she knows she's not in water, Vicky is wide-eyed and maybe even like leaning a little too far out of the canoe, like watching it, just like entranced.
Leaning out a little too
leaning
far?
Out a little too far.
Roger looks over at her, and for the split second, he gets that like weird feeling of wanting to push her, but like,
oh my God.
You know when you're just like, I could push her right now and she'd fall out.
Yeah.
Like, why did I?
Yeah. And she's like,
and then you
right
feel guilty for
edge.
Even thinking that. Like, why did I think of that? But he's
so easy.
But then he looks at himself and he's like right next to her, and he was further away on the boat. And he was like, while he was thinking, he was like edging towards her. Instead, he pulls her back in.
He grabs you just that you realize you were about to tip out of the boat, and then Roger has you, pulls you back into the boat.
Barely even reacts. She just like.
It's just a sky whale.
It's just a sky whale.
Nobody freak out.
Calm down.
It's just a sky whale.
Yeah, she just kind of still like wide-eyed mouth kind of agape is like pointing at it and like looking at Roger.
Hello, Mr. Whale. We're just travelers on our way to the dance.
Makes this kind of strange sound as it starts to kind of fade into the distance, moving away from you. And by the time it moves away, Bobby, you start hearing a strange sound deep in the distance. What sounds like the hum of an engine. It sounds like. And you look and you can see that you are above and pretty far to the south of what looks like a plane, like a C-130, like U.S. Army plane.
Like transport plane? Like one of those
like
big
a transport
ones?
Plane, yeah. Whoa. And you're above it and pretty far to the south, and it's like slowly flying away from you over the city.
Do you see that? Do you see that?
And you guys can see it now that he points it out. A plane slowly flying away and getting lost in the mist. What? Between the whale and the plane, the confusion of the moment, a lot of time passes. And before you know it, you're suddenly like coming down to within the height of the buildings of this city. Now, you see the city kind of like rolling away in the distance, and it is massive. It's very, very large. And the place where you come down is just not really different from any other, not ruined like it is up top, but any other beat up part of the city. Your boat just like sort of slowly descends and comes to rest on a broken street. On like some outer neighborhood of this city. You hear far in the distance these clack, 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 the sounds of gunfire. You hear the loose sounds of explosions, mortars far away, echoing on the air. And Bobby, you definitively recognize the look of this city as the city you saw when you were in your coma.
Oh, God.
The place that you were in. This you feel like your father might be here somewhere if you can find the battle.
And he says to... He just
and the boat settles completely and stops on this street. You don't see any people, but it is night. And you can see stars above now as the mists begin to clear that you just apparently flew through. You see the night sky, the two moons, everything kind of the same as it was above, but now with a city that is not completely yet dead. Just slowly dying.
This is Yathil. This is where the battle is. He's here.
Who?
The colonel. He's here.
Neil gets up out of the canoe, stands up, and he starts like looking around at the buildings and the broken ground. And he like looks up at the scene and he like holds his fingers like this.
As you hold your fingers like that, oh, that's amazing, because I believe, hold on, let me just confirm this. So cool. All right, so you hold your fingers like that. Give me an art roll.
Yeah, like a, for audio listeners, for like a director making a movie frame with his fingers, with his thumb and four fingers.
That's awesome.
10
on an art roll. You put this frame together and you can see the beauty that lies in the heart of this city. It is maybe Victorian or maybe Belle Epoque. In its architecture and design. You realize this broken street that you're on was a cobblestone street. And you see a lot of the buildings have like iron railings and stuff like that. And just the hallmarks of these times and these architectural designs. And as you put your fingers up in this frame, you see something that makes you, Neil, so happy. If you go to our evidence board and you look... Under the picture of Richard Bryce, who had the gym bag, under the picture of Dr. Richard Dallin, you'll see a postcard.
Oh.
Oh, my God.
This postcard is almost exactly what you see.
Oh, my God.
Four spired buildings rising up, and back in the distance, you see what must be a palace of some kind that... is the backdrop to all of this city that is laid out before you. And so you remember this moment, finding this postcard, and it was at Barbas's house you first found this postcard.
Oh my God.
So Neil, he looks at this through his fingers, and he like sees the palace, and he like turns to the others with this like big, like guileless, pure, like childlike smile. And like turns back and starts walking towards the palace.
Okay. Neil is, you hear his feet start crunching on the broken cobblestone streets. There's like debris in the streets. You don't see any signs of any people, but again, you feel the wind, you hear the distant clacking, maybe you hear the distant barking of a dog, distant shouts of people. The city is alive in some way, but it's battered, it's ruined. As you begin walking, you start to see what you were seeing at the edge of your vision in the ruined city, you see here, up close and personal. You look at a building and you see these tall, slim windows that are just odd from like modern American architecture. Like, it's not the way windows are framed in Boston, right? Like, these are taller and slimmer. And you'll look and... right before your very eyes, two windows will become three in a building. A building that has an open door will suddenly have two closed doors side by side, like in an instant, right in front of your vision. So everybody give me a sanity roll.
Oh, that was the one.
It feels as if this very place is shape-shifting around you.
Fail, 96.
Yeah, fail, 31.
Okay.
40 under 46.
Nice.
Oh, wow. Fail,
53
over 30.
Okay. Bobby, you take 1 point of sanity damage. Yeah. Roger, you take 6 points of sanity damage. The best way I can describe it, Roger, is that you get a very true sense that there is no navigable way through this city because of how it is changing right in front of your eyes. You then take 6 points of sanity damage.
It's so funny. We're currently playing like four games right now that all have the same mechanic.
Yes.
Yeah.
Vicky, you take Bobby in the face. Sorry, Bobby.
It's all right. It felt great.
I feel like I'm losing my mind.
I needed that.
I needed that. Thank you.
Vicky, you take 1 point of sanity damage. Neil, you take no sanity damage on your loss. You simply look up and you see an open path toward the palace. You are moving in the right direction to get to that place. I mean, if that's the first place you want to go, then you are heading in the right direction.
Yeah.
You, at this point, Neil, see something that I think makes you, I'm not going to tell you how you feel. You look up and how did I want to describe this? You see a
pizza place.
No, you see these like posters. Posters on walls of the city buildings. And some of them are, you see one that's repeated over and over again. And it looks like a caricature of a soldier in a helmet. And there are words underneath it. And it is written in Tartessian, a language which you now understand because you have the Tartessian book that you found in Michelle Van Vitz's apartment. You kind of went deep down that road to the point where you even started speaking Tartessian out in the regular world. And you can translate these posters as saying, "The soldier of Ythil is the guarantor of victory." You're seeing these like propaganda posters on the walls as you move through the city. Give me another sanity roll, Neil. 59 over 30. You continue walking and you believe, and you come to like a dead end of this one street. You look back at the way you came and you think there's a door into this, what looks like a townhouse, like apartment building, that if you could get into this floor and get up to the second floor, you can cross over into a part that looks behind it will continue the street in the way that you want to go. You just feel like, the mechanics are failing these sanity rolls is giving you like the feeling of the correct path you have to take through this like moving labyrinth. In this case, there isn't a street that you have to take, but it is an apartment townhouse that you have to kind of move through in order to get back on the right or onto the right path.
Yeah, I go into the building. And
so all of a sudden you see Neil comes up to this doorway and you turn the knob and open it up. It's unlocked and it's open. And you walk in and you see at the first floor, there's no windows on the far wall. It has this fading wallpaper and some broken down furniture and stuff like that. There seemed to be a chandelier type light in the middle of the room that has fallen and broken on the ground. And then you see these wooden stairs with an iron railing going up to a second floor. You walk up the stairs, and all three of you are just following behind, right? Wherever Neil is going, you're just walking at this point.
Yeah. I mean, he flew the boat, so I think I'm going to go with
charge.
Him.
He flew the boat.
I'm going with him.
I flew the boat.
Through the boat, through the flying whale space, whatever it was. So, yeah.
Okay. You come up these stairs, and around into a building, around and onto the second floor. And as you get into the main room of the second floor, Neil, you immediately, you kind of turn into like a short hallway where you have a balcony that overlooks the stairs going up, and then it opens up into a wider room. you can see as soon as you get to the top of these stairs and start walking into the main room that from here you can see blood on the floor of this main room. A pool of blood that has like eked out past the main room and into this hallway as you're walking along it. As you keep moving and come around the corner, you see another like living room type space. But in the middle of it, there is a shattered table, wooden table that has been turned on its side and one leg broken. You see blood is all out under the table and pouring out into the hallway where you are. And following that pool of blood back and up, you see behind what once might have been behind the table, three dining room chairs. In the three chairs, you see three people sitting in the chairs. It looks like a rather large, well-conditioned man, a woman, a petite woman, also adult, and then what looks like a, and then what looks like a child, a girl, younger girl. Some visual jokes there. Roger immediately compared himself to the shredded dude, immediately compared Vicky to the petite woman, and then Bobby to the little girl.
I do love as a woman in gaming, if there's ever a woman in the game, I just go, is it me?
Me, right?
Could it be me? Oh my god, it's no, me, it's, the woman.
It's Roger and Vicky and our daughter.
Who doesn't right. exist.
Right. In the shadow
see, world, they do. You see these three people. However, you're not able to know if it's Roger and Vicky and their daughter at the moment, because all three of them have white pillowcases wrapped around their heads and a bullet hole in the middle of the face, and blood is just streaming out of them onto the floor as you walk around the corner and see this scene.
Oh my God.
Roger, do you think this is Roger, Vicky, and their daughter, or is this a Troy meta thing?
I think that's what Roger thinks. I think that's what Roger thinks. And he also...
Give me a goddamn sanity roll then.
He also remembers shooting someone in the head with a pillow over their face.
Oh my God.
Wait, who did Roger shoot in the head?
So many people.
He shot the old woman in the...
Put a pillow
over her face, a bullet right in the middle. Wow. Boom.
And so that mix of the recognition that he thinks this is them and this daughter that keeps coming up and remembering shooting the old woman, I failed my sanity roll.
You fail your sanity roll. Okay. In that moment, you take 2 points of sanity damage as all four of you come around this corner and Roger sees this. Roger, the form of the man who you believe to be you in some sort of alternate reality, snaps up out of the chair and just stands up, looking seemingly through a pillowcase at the three of you. And it's just like, hello, welcome to my home. And we'll see you next week.
No. At least you know it's awesome. Not Roger. He's far too polite.
Roger.
It is bizarre, Roger.
Do you think it's possible there's one alternate dimension where Roger is kind? Do you think it's possible?
It's Bizarro Roger opposite because he's being kind and he was killed by a bullet.
Oh my God.